For a startup, a large corporation might seem like an unyielding fortress. For a corporation, a startup could appear as a whirlwind of unpredictability. But what happens when you bridge that gap? In this episode of the Privately Speaking podcast, host and KPMG partner Erica Whitmore and Andrew Matusak, managing director of KPMG Ventures, delve into the concept of the next layer of growth and discuss the pivotal role of strategic capital, emphasizing its ability to connect the nimbleness of startups with the expansive reach and resources of established enterprises.
So today on our show, we have Andrew Matusak, who is a managing director with KPMG Ventures. I'm sure many of you didn't even know that KPMG has a venture arm, but very excited to have Andrew on today and share more about what KPMG Ventures does. And yeah, just really excited to have you on today, Andrew.
Erica, thank you. Very pleased to be on the podcast today. I've been with the firm now for a little over 20 some years. Prior to
That's a veteran in this world.
Yes. Yeah, it's been a while. I like to say that I was actually with a startup before I joined KPMG, but that was so long ago. It's hard to remember who I was 20 some years ago. That doesn't really count. Prior to launching KPMG Ventures, I helped stand up our corporate development team with a few other folks, including Mark Goodburn and Derek Raymond. And over the course of the last, about a decade and a half, I've been involved in most of our firm's strategic transactions. And that directly led to kind of the topic and why we're here today is launching of KPMG Ventures, which we did back in 2019. I'd love to kind of walk through more about it, but you know, kind of the genesis of what led us down this path is about creating these deeper relationships with the startups and the founders that are shaping the future of professional services and how large enterprises engage with firms like ours.
Andrew, I was, like we've talked about, so excited to learn more. You know, I've always known about it. When I say always, I've known about it for probably, I would say, 4 years. So, you know, I'm not from its inception, but and I keep hearing more and more about it, and I keep hearing more and more excitement about it. And so I was so excited to meet you and learn more about it. And then I was so honored that you were willing to be on the podcast because I want the world to know about it, right? And I think, you know, maybe if you could start where you kind of teed this up already, Andrew, but maybe for those listeners who, two things, probably weren't familiar with some of the corporate development stuff that we were doing prior to ventures. And then ventures. Let's talk about KPMG Ventures, what we've been doing, and like really what we're focused on. Maybe those two things.
I think the common theme between both corporate development and the ventures program is that we as a firm, as we evolve to meet our clients' needs, we're going to have to augment our own internal organic development efforts with outside innovation. And prior to the ventures program, that was predominantly accomplished through acquisitions. And I think that, you know, certainly acquisitions form the backbone of an inorganic growth strategy. And one of the things that we saw in the late 20-teens was the acceleration of new technology, and specifically AI. Prior to the launch of, or kind of, I'll say the unveiling of generative AI in 22, there was still something called AI, AI and ML. And those technologies were also accelerating at a rapid clip. And one of the things that we recognized was firms like ours need to be able to have not just a position on the new technology and how our clients are going to interact and engage with it, but be on the forefront of those technologies and be able to have deep conversations and bring the companies that matter to our clients. And so when we launched KPMG Ventures, we did so with the intention of forging deep relationships. And of course, the investment get the headline, right? I think everybody's excited. We can actually take direct equity investments in startups. And that's something that gets a lot of the attention. But I think the deeper rationale for why we're doing this is to forge the relationships. Whether or not we make the investment or not, we want to be the firm that is known for having relationships, being easy to work with, meeting the startups at their level. And I think that's something that's really needed in the market. Startups today are more sophisticated. They're moving into large enterprises faster than ever. And being able to have that connection with the founders that is deeper than just simply an alliance relationship or some, go-to-market motion. This is a much more durable and also a commitment to the startups. And I think that that's been met with a lot of enthusiasm.
I'm going to do a shameless plug, Andrew, because why not? I think there's two themes that you talked about there that I think we have. There's correlation across the firm and the firm's strategy, right? Relationship development, right? Super huge. That's across all service lines. That's across our entire firm, from partners, managing directors, managers, all. Hopefully we instill it from campus, right? Literally. Hopefully that is showing through in our recruiting efforts. Again, whether or not we hire, we can't hire all the few people we want. We wish we could. We can't. But we better darn well have made you feel good about the process and like you have a friend or friends at the firm, right? For hopefully your entire career. But then also, this is where the shameless plug comes in, is the Growth Capital Conference. The whole idea behind the Growth Capital Conference is to facilitate a conference that benefits both the companies that are looking for funding as well as the venture capitalists who are looking to invest. So it's that ecosystem and supporting that environment versus looking for our next project, right? And so love those themes and how I think they're intertwined with our strategy and just kind of what we're trying to do across the board. So we are very focused right now, if I'm understanding correctly, on what's the future of our professional services and how are we going to make sure that we are on the cutting edge. I think you used a different phrase, but we're at the front, at the forefront, right?
Forefront.
So
Yeah.
tell me a little bit about that strategy and then kind of how that plays into, maybe some of the companies that we've invested in and then, what we're looking for here in the next couple of years.
Yeah. I think there's been a shift, and I think everybody's talking about it. In fact, I'll just say that it's infrequent that the term AI is not, used. Everything from the pitch decks to the everyday conversations, I don't think there has been a pitch deck that we've received that doesn't have AI in it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
So I think it's a pervasive theme that the expectations of firms like ours is to be proficient in providing advice on how large enterprises can adopt and drive actual meaningful value from these new tools, but also that we ourselves are adopting these tools. So I think it's in both ways that these relationships with some of these startups are beneficial. If I were to step back and say, what are we trying to really accomplish with a ventures program? I think it's similar to what you said, I think, or it resonated with how you said that we're developing these relationships. It's about relationships. We want to have the reputation with our clients that when they bring us into conversation, we're bringing along the best, whether it's internally developed or it's innovation that's been developed outside our four walls. We want to bring that to bear on each and every one of our client engagements. And in my opinion, I think one of the strongest, most compelling ways to form those relationships is through investments, a signal of commitment to the relationship. And I think it's about not just a signal to the startup itself, but also a signal to the market that we're not tourists in this area. We're committed to it. And it's a long-term commitment that demonstrates that there's an appreciation for just how much effort, resources, and time and energy we're going to be putting into making sure that we're always advancing our clients' agendas and trying to solve their problems, both that they have today and the problems they're going to be facing tomorrow. That might be new technologies outside of AI, things like quantum, et cetera. Part of what we want to be doing is looking a little bit around that proverbial corner to try to identify what the client problems of tomorrow will be. And I think you also brought up an interesting point. When ventures is evaluating what startups that we want to be prioritizing, we're always trying to create a portfolio that is representative of not just the business of today, but the business of tomorrow. So we've invested in a number of companies. I'll call out in particular Auditoria, an investment that we made a few years ago. Auditoria is a company that is on the forefront of developing solutions to automate the CFO stack. So if you think about, kind of where these technologies are starting to land, and I think there's a lot of I'll say there, it's a contentious discussion sometimes about the value that firms are seeing from the adoption of AI. I think that there are a few areas where it's less contentious, and I think that those areas tend to be high volume areas where automation just seems to make a lot of sense. And I think, the CFO stack, we're talking AR, AP, close, et cetera. Those are areas where we've seen real adoption that can drive meaningful value for our clients. And so an investment in a company like Auditoria that is working with some of our larger alliance partners on developing solutions to allow our clients to scale their CFO operations without decoupling the growth of the CFO stack from the growth of the company. I think that's important. And I think that's what's kind of a little bit less, I'll say, there's a lot of press being written lately where there are folks that are calling into question the return on the investment that folks are getting from this AI. And I think areas where Auditoria and where we're focusing on are those that we'll say value is able to be captured a little bit more clearly than some other areas.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to switch gears on us just a little bit, Andrew, because I do think kind of going back to what we started with in terms of corporate development and maybe key trends that you're seeing just in terms of corporate venture, because while this may be unique to like the Big Four, which I think it is, especially in the US, right? It's not unique to, larger companies out there in the world. So what are you seeing in terms of industry trends? Obviously AI, right? But what else are you seeing that those particular kind of those, again, those venture arms of those larger companies are focused on?
Yeah. I think, if we're looking at like corporate venture capital, which is it's a little over a century old now. And some of the trends over the course of the last, we'll call it decade, to maybe zoom out just a bit. I think that in general, what we're seeing is increased participation by corporate venture capital in proportion to just traditional venture capital. I think that that is a hopefully more durable trend. I know it's been cyclical over the course of, say, the last 50 years, but over the course of the last decade, there's been a marked and fairly predictable trend upwards in terms of the participation of corporate venture units in overall deals. And that's both volume and deal
Deal
length.
size. Yeah.
So I think that's, I think continued, and we're likely going to see my own opinion on this is we're likely to see that continue just because of the pace of the technological change. It's very difficult now for large corporates to stay relevant and current with the trend because of the just the technological skill required as well as the cost to fund. So it's a very efficient R&D function. So I think that increased CVC participation is one trend. I think more recently, what we're seeing is a trend of staying private longer. That's playing out from a CVC perspective, interestingly, in some of the later stage deals where corporate venture capital, which doesn't have the same fund life requirements that traditional does, is still looking for ways to recycle capital and start to get liquidity to be able to redeploy that back into earlier stages. And so I think that's leading to an increase in importance in secondary transactions. And also just kind of changing how CVCs are managing their portfolio and putting probably a greater emphasis on harvesting and having a real strategy in place rather than just waiting for the traditional liquidation event.
Yeah. And maybe a follow-on question. This is a curveball. Sorry, we didn't,
Yeah,
this
that's
wasn't in
great.
the
Love
practice.
curveballs.
How do those firms, at least based on what you've seen and maybe even drawing on your own experience with KPMG Ventures, how does that look compared to like a typical venture in terms of how they are working with those portfolio companies? Like, are they very involved? Does it depend? You said have a strategy, right? So they don't necessarily have whatever it's 3 to 5 to 7, depending on who you're talking to, right? They don't necessarily have that timeline, but how are they interacting with those, portfolio companies?
Yeah, I think it goes to a trend or a change maybe in the perception of the role of corporate venture capital. And so, I mean, I think one of the things that we've always tried to communicate is that we don't view it as a trade-off between strategic and financial. I think that oftentimes it's framed as, and I'll hear the question all the time is, well, are you a strategic investor? Are you a financial investor? In our minds, that's a false choice. And I think that you can be both a financial and a strategic. And in fact, actually, one of the benefits of a CVC is that you have a bit of a degree of influence over the success of some of the portfolio companies. So if done well, you should be both achieving strategic objectives as well as tilting the odds a bit in your favor from a financial perspective. So I think, as I think more have come around to that way of thinking, I think there has been an increased emphasis placed on the relationship of driving, both objectives. And so I think always, I would imagine, obviously in our own perspective, and I imagine this is true in most cases, when a CVC makes an investment, it's typically for a strategic objective. You're measured against those strategic objectives. And that often is about either, whether it's creating new markets for yourself or whether it's filling some skill, capability, or credibility gap, or whether it's about credentializing, a legacy player in a new market. I think all of those things are driving that close relationship. And I think more recently, you've seen large, well, not just large, but all corporate venture, most corporate venture programs, I think, geared more towards cultivating both and trying to achieve both objectives. So, I think there's this a continuum of the types of transactions that you could do going from your very, I'll say standard traditional venture capital investment all the way through to a highly strategic, create new markets type of an investment. I hope the future of the CVC industry is about cultivating both for the benefit of both the startup as well as the investor. And if you do it well, I think it benefits all parties and it creates a positive spiral upwards where CVC can continue to have more influence in the overall venture capital market.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. In terms of macroeconomic conditions and valuations, and obviously the world is moving, changing, lots of moving pieces, although I do think it's calmed down here a little bit. But what's your view in terms of macroeconomic conditions and how that interplays with what you're seeing with valuations right now in the deals that you're looking at?
It's interesting. I think the two are fairly decoupled. If I look at, and hopefully they come back together at some point, but I do think that valuations continue to rise in early and emerging stage venture, perhaps driven by some outliers. But I think the overall trend, if you look at the median, is rising valuations. And I think it's interesting to contrast that with the up until recently a pretty sparse liquidity environment. And so I think there's a bit of pressure that's likely going to be applied. I think the valuations in the emerging and early stage certainly have risen disproportionately for certain industries. I think if you look at AI, obviously AI is probably the lion's share of the valuation rise. But I do think that it's difficult to pick and isolate AI from most of the other venture investments. Almost every startup today, in some way, shape, or form, involves some type of AI. And so I think it's a bit simplistic to say that the valuation increase has been driven just simply by including the word AI and the letters in your URL. I think the actual facts are a bit more nuanced. We're seeing everything from supply chain to manufacturing to other things also have rises in valuations. And certainly they include elements of AI, but they also include other elements as well.
What does KPMG Ventures look for? And I have an idea on this, but in a potential investment.
Yes. I think the first thing I'll say is that all of our investments are guided by a philosophical approach that is, we want to serve our clients in the best possible way that we can. And so when we're looking at investments, we're looking at it through the lens of how does this either enhance a core service offering that we have today, or how does it build on or create an adjacent service offering, especially those that are going to be meaningful to our clients. And so, as a large firm, we're certainly looking to solve large problems. And so everything that we do is put through that lens of, is this going to be meaningful for our clients? Is it going to be a large problem to solve? And is it something that we can work together on? So typically what that means is that we're looking at technology firms where where each party can bring something to the table. So they're bringing new emerging technology, some perhaps forward deployed engineers or other folks that can help our clients with the actual adoption of it. And we can bring our professionals as well. So whether it's technical accounting folks or whether it's change management consultants, it's all about being able to wrap our services around these new technologies to create something that is meaningfully valuable for our clients.
And I'm going to pull on a thread from earlier in the discussion. I also think this is really important because I'm biased, so I'll start with that. But I'm biased, and I do think that KPMG is leading in terms of technology, especially, I'm an audit professional, right? And I see the tools that we use compared to, maybe some of the other firms when we pick them up as new clients. And there's a difference, again, understanding that, not all engagements are created equal, but it's also, like you said, been a little bit of the R&D, right, for some of our services that we're already delivering and making sure that we are, doing everything we can to make sure that it's as easy on the client as we can, right? Can you talk a little bit about that and just, again, making sure that we are constantly trying to be like ahead of the game,
Yeah,
right?
I think it's all about experimentation. I think that any firm that chooses one path to go down and blindly follows it is likely going to end up with a solution that's suboptimal. So I think that all of us involved in this are in the same camp here that we need to be making multiple bets on and exploring various different ways to solve these challenges. I think if we're only picking one way, even if that's an investment, internal organic build, I think it benefits everyone, including our clients and our professionals and our partners, to be exploring various different technologies, various different companies. We're early in the game. I don't think that any of us have a real understanding of how it's going to end. We should be trying to explore different ways. And that might mean investing in one company. It might mean exploring, partnering with another. It might mean developing an internal technology. And at some point, all of those may come together to form the right solution. But I think, yeah, I think it's exactly right. I think firms do themselves a disservice if they're not trying to explore multiple different avenues to solve these problems. In fact, I don't think that anyone has a solid, grasp of what our clients' challenges are going to be in the next 5 to 10 years.
100%. Yes.
I mean, do you remember 2000 and, 2021, we were all blind to right around the corner, and that was going to fundamentally change all of our lives. So,
Right.
good reminder.
Absolutely. No, I 100% totally agree. Well, we'll round out maybe not the last question, but second to the last question. What are your predictions for 2026 in terms of industry? If you want AI, it's a popular topic. Everyone likes to talk about it, but just based on kind of what you're seeing.
Yeah, I think, from my perspective, I think that the portfolio companies that we're already working with, as they continue to gain traction in large enterprises, we're going to continue to see adoption increase, right? So I think one of the challenges that a lot of technology firms have experienced over the course of the last 18 to 24 months has been this pilot purgatory where promising startups that have cool technology are brought into and usually secured or procured through some type of, corporate credit card or some very small pilot program in a very localized level within a large organization. And I think a lot of folks referenced that study earlier. I think, that's a symptom, right, of that pilot purgatory where there wasn't a great path from pilot to production. So one of my predictions is going to be that we're going to see better adoption uptick. And I think it's through a number of reasons, and I think it's going to be a confluence of a few factors, including, not just the maturity of these startups, but there's a whole new ecosystem of startups that are supporting other startups to get them enterprise.
Absolutely. You can have one like this. It's a few folks in AI can create a lot of really cool companies, right? And we're seeing it happen, which is crazy, but exciting, like all at the same time.
And I think the more same thing, right? Experimentation. I think large organizations are experimenting. I think as that adoption increases because of the enterprise readiness, because of the maturity of the companies, because of the general acceptance of the technology, I think that is a of development. I would expect some consolidation as that adoption does tend to lead to winners and losers within the market. And so some consolidation, I think that's good. I think that we're at an all-time high for the number of US based VC-backed startups. I think that it's healthy to have a bit of a consolidation to pull back and create room for new growth. So I think, enterprise adoption is probably one of the trends that I would see continuing to 2026. We're starting to see some hints that some new technologies, whether it's quantum or others, are going to be increasingly important. I think we've had a number of conversations internally about some of these new technologies. Many are probably waiting on kind of the moment that creates the burning platform for their widespread adoption. But if they do come, I would imagine that 2026 could be a very busy year as folks try to pile into new technologies as they may be overbiased or overbalanced towards AI and may need to rebalance their portfolios, even for strategic reasons. So I hope that continues as well. I mean, broadly, I hope that the IPO and M&A market open back up. We could all use some.
There's a pipeline. There's a pipeline.
Yes. And if not, I would, if we don't see that, I think the secondary markets, which had a huge 2025, I would expect them to grow in importance, even more so if we don't see that kind of liquidity open up through traditional exits.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, this is my last question.
Great.
So, I do want to make sure that, I think about questions that our listeners might have, right? And there may be some, high growth companies out there that would like to interact with a strategic, whether that's a KPMG Ventures or another corporate venture arm. What are some maybe twofold, some best practices, and then maybe some not so best practices that you've seen. So some things to avoid and some things that would, be a best practice.
Yes. Yeah. I think the best practices, and these are probably just going to be reciprocals of each other, right? But one of the things that we always like to see is that especially just given what we just talked about the ability for startups to be more enterprise ready sooner in their life cycle, we do, as a large organization, we like to see at least a well thought out plan, a realistic plan about how you're going to break into the market. Enterprise sales cycles are long, they're challenging, they're relationship driven typically. And oftentimes, startups have an unrealistic expectation of what it's going to take to break in. Obviously, the more experienced the founder, the more exposure they have, the more likely they're going to have expectations that are realistic. But we do like to see folks that at least have thought through and are a bit more conservative and kind of how quickly they're going to be able to convert some of their pipeline into actual revenue, as well as just having expectations, as an investor of what we're realistically able to do, right? And so we often joke that sometimes there's an expectation that you have a strategic investor, they participate in your round and there's some type of API that you get plugged into to get new market and new channel. That is not true, right? So I think just like anything else, it is a relationship game. And so startups, and this kind of bridges to your other question of what are we looking for? We're looking for startups that are willing to work with us to form those relationships first internally to create that credibility that opens up and provides the level of trust to open up that relationship with our clients. And secondly, a realistic expectation of what it's going, how we're going to go about this long enterprise sales cycle. So I think that's something, those are things that we're looking for, things that I would say are best practice. I also think that it's always encouraging to see startups and founders and entrepreneurs that have a high degree of conviction. It is an important element that we look for when we're evaluating investments to we want to see companies and founders that have big aspirations. I think I mentioned earlier, we're looking for companies that are solving big problems. Our clients have big problems. So we're looking for founders that are willing to take on the big problems, the big challenges, have a high degree of conviction, enthusiasm, and they want to attack these things the same way that we do. And so I say, in terms of things that I would suggest, that have come across, obviously there's a large number of companies that are using buzzwords like, AI, generative AI agents, a whole bunch of words that are typically get flooded into the pitch decks. Oftentimes, and I think it's just a matter of just being realistic about what the actual technology is and not overselling it. So we're looking for firms, for example, that are helping solve some, professional service automation, controls testing, things that are adjacent to kind of what we're doing. We understand that not all companies are creating their own large language model. That's not realistic. Kind of acknowledging what you're good at, what you've created, the underlying technology, it helps us sift through. And as you can imagine, the number of pitch decks and opportunities that you get presented with, it can become a bit difficult to sift through and find the technology that's actually there versus wrapper technology.
Well, you don't want to tie up, everybody's time for however long that takes when, if some of it could have been known up front, right? So that's important. If I heard correctly, you look at 350 to 400 deals a year, is that right?
Yeah, and I'd say the number is probably much higher than that if you include deals that aren't on point. But yeah, we're somewhere around 350 to 500 deals per year that are realistic opportunities for us. And so, it's not that's not a terribly large number compared to others, but it is large enough number where yes, it's helpful to have pitch decks that are very transparent and honest. It'd be interesting to do. I haven't seen anybody do this yet. The occurrence of the terms AI agent or generative AI. I think folks have done it for earnings transcripts, but I haven't seen anybody like pitch deck do it for any, are there any companies out there that don't have those words in their description
Right.
nowadays?
I mean, I hope there's some kind of an AI story, even if it's just in the efficiencies of your operations, but
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think, a lot of times I think that gets confused, right? I think that folks conflate the use of the technology with the production of the technology. It's helpful for us to differentiate between that because you're absolutely right. We would be surprised if companies aren't using the technology, aren't consumers of the technology and making their experience better. But yes, oftentimes I think folks kind of conflate those two things and say, oh, it's an AI company.
yeah, absolutely. Well, Andrew, I really appreciate your time today. I just so honored to have you here and thank you for taking time. I know you're very busy and I took you away from probably looking at least two deals, so I'll let you get back at it, but thanks for being on today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to KPMG's Privately Speaking podcast, and be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.